Time now to check in with our rural reporters. And this week we're off to the carnival to meet the workers behind the scenes, bringing the bright lights of Sideshow Alley and the thrill of amusement rides to towns around the country. We'll visit a prison with a difference where inmates spend their days in the sheep and cattle yards picking apples and sorting timber, meet a beekeeper who wants to share her passion by encouraging others to host a beehive on their own property, and we'll take a walk with an Indigenous elder who's sharing his knowledge of the land with the next generation.
Try to teach these young people about using your eye, your ear, your nose, you know, to smell. So you could smell things. My dad could smell a snake. I said, "Hey, hang on a minute. What? Oh, there's a snake here somewhere." Our old people could smell the water on the wind. So they knew which way to take the cattle, you know. They knew which cow was missing, you know. They knew how to track without a compass.
Passing on the wisdom of elders to future generations, that's coming up. But first, let's head to the carnival where the fairy floss is spinning and the Ferris wheel is too.
The clatter of amusement rides, bright lights of Sideshow Alley, and the smell of Dagwood dogs and fairy floss. For the young and the young at heart, a travelling carnival is a sensory overload and a lot of fun. But for others, it's all in a day's work.
Well, I wouldn't really know any different, so to me it's just normal life. Most families, like, I'm fourth generation, but there will be some that are from further generations back, and it's kind of a couple kids of each family will kind of stay in. They'll get a partner elsewhere and stay in the carnival life.
While generations of Australian families have grown up enjoying their annual visit to the carnival, for others, like Rochelle Young's family, it's a long tradition of working hard to bring a smile to faces of children and adults. Rochelle is a fourth generation show worker, carrying on a trade that started with her great-grandfather. Hi, I'm Emma Siossian. I've come to the Young Family Carnival here in Port Macquarie on the New South Wales mid-north coast. The carnival has been coming here for 45 years and has become something of an institution in the town over summer.
We've been coming here that long that it's kind of the normal thing. Summers are spent in Port Macquarie sort of thing. 90% of the year we start in New South Wales and we go to Queensland and then back down to New South Wales, to the central areas, then Victoria, and then up to here. Well, I like seeing all the different places. Even though I've seen them many times, things change, towns change. Seeing all the happy people having fun, going on the rides and the games, and all the happy kids.
Rochelle's partner, Darren Tierney, also works with the show, which he joined after originally working as a chef in New South Wales.
Well, many years back, I think they used to do the Tamworth Carnival, and I just missed out on this one, and I used to be a chef, and one of my friends joined, and he said, "Oh, this was great, come and give it a try," and I really wanted to get out of where I was, so I moved out here and met up with him, and I really never left. Well, I could be classified as one of them ones that said they'd run away, but it was never run away. I enjoy this lifestyle. For us, it's kind of casual. You know, we do work hard most of the time, but in the end, you know, I like seeing the faces, the kids that you make happy, the people that you make happy, so that's why I chose to stay.
Rochelle and Darren have two boys, aged 6 and 2, and live in a large caravan they describe as a house on wheels.
There is a certain freedom you get doing this. You can't go to work every day and spend the time with your family. Like here, we're around our family 100% of the time, so our work is our family. Our kids get brought out. But yeah, you get the free. There's a certain type of freedom you get where you get to spend it around your family a lot. So, and a lot of people don't get that.
And while it is a life with more freedom and flexibility than normal for children, they do still have to go to school. Most of the school year, they have to put on a uniform and attend the National School for Travelling Show Children, which travels throughout the east coast of Australia all year long. The curriculum is set by the Dubbo School of Distance Education, and the classrooms roll in next to the show in semi-trailers.
The classrooms are really big and they are mobile, so at each show that we go to, there'll be one or two classrooms, depending how many kids are there. and they set it up and the kids go to school at normal times. It's K to 6 and occasionally there's prep kids that come in, and the teachers teach all of those kids in one classroom, so they're used to all different age groups and it's good for them. Until I was about 8 or 9 I did that, and then we settled in Sydney for a while so we could do schooling and high school and etc.
Meanwhile, if the regular crowds at the Port Macquarie Carnival are anything to go by, the appeal of the old-fashioned travelling show remains strong in communities around Australia. Some of the rides have been in certain families for decades, described as family antiques. And as I wandered around the Port Macquarie Carnival, I took a spin on one of those rides with my young son, the Cha-Cha, and it was just as much fun as I remembered.
All the kids love the clowns and the old rides like the Dodgem cars and the Cha-Cha. And
that's my son's favourite, yeah. The Cha-Cha. We had to do that a few times this year.
Everyone loves the Cha-Cha. That Cha-Cha is over 50 years old. It's been in our family for a long time, and people will see it at one show and be like, oh, I went on there 30 years ago, and they still love it.
We deal with the older rides and the older generation of people. Like, I work the Tilda World here. We only put it up once a year. And just to see even the old people, the other night I had a 60 or 70 year old come on, and you know, he loves it. The people like it. The older rides, you know, they're a lot different to the newer ones, and I think that's what people like.
It's landmarking time at this farm in southern New South Wales. The process here is the same as it is at most other sheepyards.
The testicles, always got to make sure that you get both of them, because if you leave one in there, they can still be fertile. Yeah? Pull the purse through and you pop each testicle. Yeah?
But this is not your typical rural property. The work here is being done by prisoners. Hi, I'm Cara Jeffrey and I'm at the Manus Correctional Centre. It's a minimum security prison where inmates are put to work in the timber yard, apple orchard and with sheep and cattle. Prison officer Jennifer Petey is showing inmates the ropes.
So if you hold on to that one. So you've got ear tag, you've done those two. Then you've got this one. This one stops the flies. Today we've just been tidying up the last of our lambs. So we've gathered the inmates, they've yarded the sheep and they've carried out the processes from tagging to giving the 6-in-1 injections through to docking tails and castrating the lambs via restrictive rubber rings and ensuring that they don't get flies by giving them a fly treatment as well.
And so are most of the offenders that you have in your farming team pretty green to farming?
Yes, so during my time here in the 2 years that I've been here, I've probably had maybe 4 or 5 of the inmates that have had any experience with farming. A large majority of them are from the metro area, so they've never seen, never heard, never touched an animal before in that terms of sheep and cattle.
Over at the timber yard, the prison's industries manager, Brad Jeffrey, is watching his inmates stack, saw and sort the timber. He says most offenders enjoy the physical nature of the work.
From what I've seen, 90% of the inmates thoroughly enjoy working in an environment like Manus. It's a country setting. Whilst we have a lot of regional offenders here, we also, it's probably 50-50 that we have from regional areas. So some of these guys have never ever experienced sheep handling or any form of animal husbandry, cattle or apple picking or anything like that. So it's all new to them. But I see a lot of these guys come through and develop skills and experience that they can use on the outside, and that's what it's all about. The aim of it is to try and reduce reoffending.
And what is that reoffending rate?
So the current rate of reoffending over a 2-year period, we expect that 50% of offenders will reoffend within 2 years.
And do you see a lot come back through the system here?
Yes, we do. Unfortunately, we do. We do have repeat offenders, but the data is showing that there is a gradual decline occurring.
As well as working with sheep and cattle and in the timber yards, prisoners here at Manus Correctional Centre are also put to work in the apple orchard.
We have around 23,000 apple trees. Out of that orchard, we produce around 2 million apples per year. They go to Batlow and are processed there. Our A-grade apples go on to meet the open market, and our B-grade apples are stored in cold storage. We withdraw around about 40,000 apples per week, which are then brought back to Manus, repacked into apple bins, and distributed to all of the correctional facilities around New South Wales.
And so how many people within the centre here work on the at the orchard side of things?
Okay, so during our busy times, which is basically picking and thinning, we can employ up to 40 inmates at a time. Typically through the off period, there's at least 15 inmates employed in the orchard at any one time. In the farming units, both sheep and cattle, we usually employ around 40 odd employees. And that also includes all of our own maintenance. So all of our farming equipment is maintained by the inmates. When an inmate arrives at Manus, they're assessed as to what their experience and skills are. And from that assessment, I place them into places of work that they will benefit from. So for instance, if we have an electrician or a plumber, a carpenter, a cabinet maker, someone who's experienced in fencing, I'll put them into a position where they can utilise those skills and obtain some education. If an inmate comes through and requests that they'd like to learn a bit more about landmarking or anything like that, I can change them over into that area.
Back at the sheepyard, prison officer Jennifer Petey says passing on her passion for agriculture is rewarding work.
It can be a very rewarding job, it can be very challenging at times, but those far in between rewards that you get outweigh the challenges. It's always good to be able to share a passion that you have. Agriculture has always been one of my biggest passions, and just enlightening people that have never had anything to do with farming that think that it's just a matter of putting an animal in a paddock and they're going to look after themselves, to enlightening them as to how much it actually takes to get an animal to the stage where it can be sent away to the market to be eaten or to be processed. So it's rewarding seeing their knowledge change and their views upon agriculture change as well.
Prison officer Jenny Petey is sharing her passion for agriculture with inmates at Manus Correctional Centre in southern New South Wales. The story brought to you by Cara Jeffrey. Still to come, we're heading to central Queensland, where an Aboriginal elder is in a race against time to pass on his knowledge of country to the next generation.
Gather a bit of leaf
and grass, and we'll make a fire.
Steve Kemp knows this land well. For tens of thousands of years, his ancestors have walked on this country and learned its secrets. Now it's Steve's turn to pass on his knowledge to the next generation. And having survived 5 heart attacks in recent years, he feels his time may be running out. Hello, I'm Inga Stunzner, and I'm here with Steve and his 3 nephews out here on Gungaloo Country in central Queensland.
It's all about the utilisation of what I teach these kids at school and try to teach these young people about using your eye, your ear, your nose, your little smell, so you could smell things. My dad could smell a snake. I said, hey, hang on a minute. What? There's a snake here somewhere. I was pretty good, but I could never smell a snake, but I end up working out what the smell was. So everyone could smell a mouse, everyone could smell, perfume and all the rest of it, but our old people could smell the water on the wind, so they knew which way to take the cattle. You know, they knew which cow was missing. You know, they knew how to track without a compass. You know, so they'd take. My dad was on a team that took cattle from the Northern Territory into New South Wales, right up the guts of Queensland. He knew every way the river run, where all the watersheds were. He knew the whole lot. I wish I was back in those days. You know.
Yeah.
On a horse for 12 months.
That's what they call crows there. No Murrays know about this one. Yeah, look at it. Different, eh? Where
crows? Crows ash, they call it.
Oh, And down the bottom, if there's any roots there, see that root there?
That's your best boomerang out. See that one there? Is that going at an angle or is that my eye?
Yeah, it's coming in that way.
Yeah. So Dad reckon these make the best boomerangs.
Well, I mean, you've got your nephews coming out and two of them have been here consistently. How important is that to have them come and not just stay for like a week, but to be here for months at a time?
Well, you needed someone to pass the knowledge on. I don't know who I was going to pass the knowledge on to. Probably it would have been my son, but I'd have to wait another 10 years probably before I could pass the knowledge on to my son. He has to do his own thing and he's doing a fantastic thing. But when I said to these fellas, I'm going to teach yous, and when I drop dead, yous got to teach my son. That's the deal. So whatever I show you, you show my son. So then I can die in peace. Yeah.
Well, today, you know, just walking around and they've been picking up, you know, spotting things that maybe a year ago they wouldn't have seen. How does that make you feel when you see them doing that and coming up to you and say, hey, look at this?
Well, thank goodness, eh? Yeah, not that old, but, you know, people don't use their eyes, they don't use their ears, they don't use their smell, like I said before. And now to actually bring them out physically and say, okay, what do you see? And then you make your own boomerang, you find your own tree, you know? And that boomerang going to be special, you know? Like that piece of wood we got today that looks like a snake, it's too good to make into a boomerang. And that would be probably in his family forever and ever, amen. I wouldn't sell it, and I'm pretty sure he won't sell it. So he'll probably hand that down. He's got grannies, so he'll probably hand it down to his grandchildren and tell them, you do not sell this for money. This tree was so special, you'll never find. I got two trees there, and we'll probably never find another tree like them two trees ever again. I'll be very surprised if we do. So they're two special trees, and money can't buy them, you know? So that's the beauty part of it, and that's what I'm trying to teach these fellas. Money can't buy them. Your first boomerang you make, the first whatever you make, you should not sell them. Hang them up on your wall. They are yours. You know, you put your sweat, and that's what you got to do. You got to put a bit of sweat into it, rub a bit of sweat into the wood. You got to put a lot of thought into it. It's like making a guitar. So people make a guitar and they make it sound sweet, but we make a boomerang and it's going to work. And we're going to make a stick that's going to protect you or whatever, you know. You got to put the thought process in. It's not just about knocking it out. Even though we're using some modern tools these days, we're still putting a thought process in. Every piece of wood you take off, you think, and you put your power of your mind into it. To anyone else, that mightn't mean anything, but to us, well, that's what I'm trying to install in them, everything. When we cut those trees today, we said, thank you. Did you thank them for your tree? And they did, eh? Mm. And that's what people don't understand anymore. So they're going to learn all this type of stuff, and when we take a creature, you've got to thank the ancestors, you know? Thank them for everything. It's like people praise the Lord or whatever. Well, we do it the other way. We've got our own Lord, which is Mundagata, Rainbow Serpent.
Steve says sharing his knowledge with his nephews has given him a sense of confidence for the future.
Today I'm sitting on a high. Everything's falling into place, thank goodness. Yeah. To pass the knowledge on to someone so it'll be there forever. And we need, like you've been talking to me, that I need someone to dictate and put the stories down, and so we can write the books and put it on the internet and all this type of stuff forever, ever. Amen, you know? That would be the most best thing before I drop dead. Yeah.
You've probably got a good 20 years in you, or 30.
I'm going to fight them, but they reckon I might have 10.
Ooh.
Yeah, they could have cut that out.
You would chop down there.
What is that?
They could have taken a shield out of there.
Scar.
A scar, look, it is definitely cut, isn't it? See, that's a square cut down there.
If you've got a fully functioning hive, you'll have up to 50,000 bees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This here is, where did he go? Here. See this guy here?
Yeah.
That's a drone. So that's a male bee. They're a bit bigger than the worker bees.
Beekeeper Carrie Chambers has a real passion for bees. So much so that she gives each of her queens their own name.
This is Queen Victoria and her colony. Sometimes I rescue bees as well, so I often call my
queens after the people or the person that has contacted me. The last bee rescue I did was from a lady called Vicky, so her rescue colony is called Queen Vicky, and that's how I keep my records.
Hi, I'm Jessica Schremmer, and I've come to meet Carrie and her bees in these hives at her home in Renmark in South Australia's Riverland. But it's not just these hives that Carrie takes care of. She branches out into hiring out her hives so other people can experience the benefits of bees on their own property.
I had a lot of friends say, oh, I'd love to have a hive in my backyard because of my fruit trees. And that just got me thinking, well, maybe there's an opportunity there to add that to my sort of business. And yeah, and so I just came up with this idea and tried it out with a couple of my friends to see if it did make an impact to their fruit trees. So I had a hive in there for a season, and yeah, the yield on their fruit trees, there was a big difference between no bees present and having bees present. I thought, yeah, well, this is something I can market and get more people interested in.
What did interest from the community so far look like?
It's been slow. It's hard to sort of get your name out when you're a new business owner, but I have an Instagram feed where I'm getting more and more followers every day, and that's a great forum for me to post up pictures of other people that are hosting hives and show them that they too can have a hive in their backyard, and it's really non-invasive, it's not scary. If you want the benefits of pollination, then this is a really easy way of doing it without having to don a bee suit.
And you pretty much help people out looking after the bees then, if they host the hive?
That's right. So the hive always remains my responsibility. I'm always the one that's responsible for ensuring the health of the hive. So I come out and inspect the hive once a month, and the host family are more than welcome to join me if they want to in the inspections to learn about bees and learn about beekeeping. Or they don't have to either. If they're quite comfortable staying as far away from the bees as possible, that's fine too. If they just want the pollination, then yeah, it's the best of both worlds. So you don't necessarily have to see the queen, which can be challenging when you have a lot of bees, but you want to see eggs.
Yeah.
And that just tells you that there's been a queen in there in the last 3 days at least. So I don't know if you can see in there, there's some grubs developing. When it's really, really hot, the queen will shut down and she stops laying for a while, just until conditions are better.
And Carrie, why are you so passionate to share your passion for the bees with other people, and why do you encourage others to actually host the hive?
Bees are so infectious. The reason I got into bees is because during spring, a swarm came and set up. We had a half wine barrel upturned on our veranda, and a swarm came through the bunghole and started building their colony in there. And that's when I thought, oh, look, we've got these bees on our veranda, and started to read about bees, and I just got sucked in. Like, they're just so interesting. Once you start learning about the intricacies of a colony and, you know, how the queen and the worker bees and the drones, how they all work together to create this one system, you just get sucked in, and you realise how important bees are for our environment, for the whole ecosystem, for the food that we eat. And I just want to share that. I want other people to realise the importance of bees, and just be aware that bees are going through a bit of a trouble at the moment. Like, there's been some issues, particularly overseas, with pests and diseases that are really having a huge impact on the beekeeping industry, and we need more people to be aware of the benefit of bees and to have an interest in, you know, looking after them.
And who can host a hive? Pretty much anyone that's interested?
That's right, yeah, anyone. And you don't need a lot of space to have bees. People contact me and say, oh, I'd love to have a beehive, but I live in town. That's fine. You only need a small space for bees. You can check with your, you know, it's a good idea to check with your neighbours and make sure no one's allergic, because some people can have quite strong reactions to bee stings. But, you know, bees, if you put them near a fence, you can get their flight path to go up and then out, and they're really non-invasive. You know, they're not an issue at all. So whether you've got space out of town, whether you're in town, you can have a hive.
How much maintenance is involved?
You can do as much or as little as you like. So if you're just interested in having the hive, then you don't have to do anything. I will come, I will look after it, I'll check. You just have to sit back and enjoy the fact that you've got bees in your garden. If you're really interested in becoming a hobby beekeeper and having a hive yourself, then it's such a great, comfortable way for you to get some mentoring and learn about beekeeping. So you can put one of my spare suits on, come out with me, and as I'm doing the inspection, I can talk you through it, teach you about bees and how to keep bees, how to keep them healthy, and how to be a responsible beekeeper. It's up to you.
So pretty much if I wanted to learn and become my own beekeeper, you're ready to teach me?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
Beekeeper Kerry Chambers from Renmark in South Australia's Riverland. She was speaking there with reporter and would-be beekeeper Jessica Schremer.